Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I want to assure you that we will enact comprehensive immigration reform so that we can put people, after they have to do certain things, obviously, give them a path to citizenship in this country as part of an overall immigration reform package. That's what I'll do.
I have to tell you, he is a decent person and a person that you do not have to be scared as President of the United States. Now, I just...
Today, after almost a century of trying, today, after over a year of debate, today, after all the votes have been tallied, health insurance reform becomes law in the United States of America.
Yes, it's me and I'm in love again. Had no love and say you.
That is the pastiche of the savage mind today. You've just heard a pastiche of my mind from John McCain speaking to La Raza in 2008, promising immigration reform, meaning a pathway to citizenship for 30 million illegals, to John McCain telling an audience that we didn't have to fear Obama. He was a nice man, like him and Michelle were just like he and Cindy. And the audience went, boo, right to the imposter himself, taking credit for the greatest, I don't know what, in 100 years, whatever. But here we are, you know, now that the dust has settled, it's over. They did it. Now the lawsuits will start. And I'm going to make a little prediction for you, that's all. It's not that I'm a contrarian, Michael Savage, here. But I'll make a little prediction for you, because I think I have the best stethoscope in America's media. You want my prediction? Many people are predicting, at least we saw today, one after the other, one so-called pundit after another, all wrong, by the way, that Obama's ratings are going to plummet, even worse. Guess what? They're going to go up. Mark it down. Mark it not in ice. Don't write it down on ice and put it in the sun. Write it down in bronze. I just said Obama's ratings are going to go up. Now, why do I say it? Because I have the best stethoscope in the American media. Now, why do I say that? Two reasons. The American people love a winner. They hate losers. He just won. And whether you want to accept it or not, he won. Let's put aside what we wanted, you wanted, he wanted, I wanted, they wanted, whatever. He just won. It's his victory. Therefore, his ratings are going to go up. Number two, the second reason is I predict that Obama's poll numbers are going to go up over the next few days is because not only do people like winners, they fear him, they fear Pelosi, as they do fear, as people fear autocrats around the world. They know that they have an autocratic regime. You hear? Now, as far as the tepid Republicans saying, oh, this is terrible, we're going to fight it, we're lining up with you people, we drink tea, we've given up coffee, we're giving up the booze, we're going to drink tea along with you people. If you believe that, if you believe those check pants phonies are going to do anything, you're mistaken. Now, we go to the next step on the Savage Nation today. Do you know what you're listening to here? Do you know who you're listening to? Why you're listening? This is not a message from God coming in on your filling. This is the Savage Nation. I am a talk show host in business 16 years last Sunday. Heard across America on, I don't know, 300 stations. Who knows? Hundreds and hundreds of stations. Millions and millions of people. Tuning in every day to find out what I'm going to say next, what I said next, what did he say before, what does he think, do I love him today, do I not love him, is he happy, is he sad, am I happy, am I sad, I have no life, it's his life, I live through him, how's his dog, I'd rather know if he ate veal parmesan, where is he, area 53, area 54, area 55, we know already what happened. We know that this group of gangsters is now going to zero in on the false global warming scare and tax us even further with the next garbage. We also know that, now here's a prediction no one made in the media yet. This is something for Limbaugh to steal tomorrow morning, since he stole the idea of America's future hangs like a loose tooth. Here, Rush, this is for you. This one goes right up the coast, Rush, by two cans and a string. Write it down, Rush. You ready for this? Now, you know in the healthcare thing, right? It was all Democrats, zero Republicans. That's a given. Okay, no Republican would have stepped on a third rail there. With immigration reform, meaning pathway to citizenship for 30 million illegal aliens, mainly Hispanics, La Raza, Mikey predicts at least 40, if not 70 Republicans will cross over to the other side and turn their coat and vote with the Democrats. It'll be a slam dunk. Now, why do I say it? Hello? Because John McCain spoke to La Raza in 08 and 09. John McCain kissed the butt of every Hispanic rallier he could find for three straight years, and it cost him the election anyway. Moreover, I did my homework for you, unlike what you'd think that I just get up here and talk. We checked who voted for amnesty for illegals in 2006 on the Republican side. Oh, it's a nice list here. Republican senators Bennett, Brownback, Chafee, Coleman, Collins, Craig, DeWine, Domenici, Frist. Remember him, Bill Frist? Where is Bill Frist now that we don't need him? Graham, Gregg, Hagel, Lugar, Martinez, McCain, McConnell, Murkowski, Smith, Snow, Specter, Stevens, Voinovich, Warner. Now, they're not all still sitting Republican senators. Now they're just standing Republican lobbyists. But they voted. The bill passed in the Senate but didn't make it out of the conference committee. And it did not become law. This bill would have established a citizenship path for illegal immigrants, giving 30 million people to vote and all the freebies that you worked for all your life that you don't have. So I'm telling you right now, Bennett, Brownback, Collins, Graham, Gregg, Lugar, McCain, McConnell, Murkowski, Snow, at the least are going to vote for it in the Senate. That's already 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 senators. Now you take those 10 senators and you throw them in the Dems. Bingo, it's over. Hello, Mexico. Hello, Mexico. Didn't you always want to live in sunny Mexico? They have such a superb government down there. The people have such unlimited freedoms and there's no crime in Mexico. Land of beauty where gardenias grow, Mexico, Mexico. Where? You guys know I'm whacked out tired today. I'm exhausted. I didn't have my nap. No, I'm a funny guy. I mean, like, what am I going to do? Cry over this today? I don't cry over spilled milk. Oh, come on. No, come on. Don't do this to me. Stop. You're going to do it to me. I'm going to hang up on you. I'm going to hang up on it. They're doing the laugh lines. They know I need entertainment. When I was a kid, no, I'm going to go back to when I was a kid. Give me 30 seconds. Why I don't cry on a spilled milk? Teach it to your children. We lived in a Bronx tenement. All right, you heard it. Big deal. There he goes again. I lived in one, though. I'm not Al Gore. Pretend that he did. We lived in a Bronx tenement, but it was clean. You could eat off the floors, unlike the people who followed us that threw their mattresses out of the fire escape on fire because the welfare check didn't arrive, okay? So don't tell me that all poor people are the same and all immigrants are the same and all countries of origin are the same. You're wrong and you're a liar. Don't get me started on this. So I'm in the Bronx tenement to settle down a bit. And I'm a kid, 4 or 5. Everyone's asleep. I used to get up very early. I almost electrocuted myself in sockets with railroad tracks, you know, little toy tracks I'd stick in. I got a shock once in a lamp. I think it was the equivalent of electroshock therapy. It straightened me out for the rest of my life. I never needed to go to the Mayo Clinic. I'm in the house. I want to climb up on a shelf or the sink. To this day, I can remember it. I take two glass milk bottles. I put them under the sink, and I stand on them to reach something. I don't know what it was. In the cabinet, the parents are asleep. Bingo, the bottles fall over. The milk bottles break. There's milk all over the floor. I got so scared to death that my father was going to kill me. So I'm cowering, and he comes in. He, instead of yelling at me, he says, "It's okay, Michael. Don't cry over spilled milk. Let's help clean it. Help me clean it up." So I really learned to not cry over spilled milk. Obama spilled the milk of socialism all across the American landscape. We all know that. We know what's coming. We know that the vote is going to become meaningless. He's going to water down the value of the vote. We're going to have the crime. We're going to have the social decay of Mexico brought into this country and legalized. This is not a an issue where they're going to bring something positive to the country, and I don't care what you say to me. The country of origin will tell you what's going to happen to the country when you have this percentage going into the mix. When you have almost 10% or more of the population here illegally because of the government media complex, because of Republicrats and Democrats, and you have 10% of the population who don't belong here legalized, I'm telling you right now what's coming. Get ready for what's going on in Mexico. The cops are corrupt. The cops are killed. People at the top of governments are being hunted down and killed by the drug cartels. And if you think this is not going to happen with legalization because they're all gardeners, you're out of your damn mind. And so your government, as gangsterish as it is with health care, you've seen nothing yet. They're just getting started. They're salivating. They're licking the gravy off their chins. And if you think Nancy Pelosi, the hammer, is satisfied, you're out of your damn mind. All right, that's all. Now, here are the questions for the Savage Nation. One, how do you feel about what Obama and Pelosi have done to America? Two, what's your reaction to Obama's self-congratulatory signing speech this morning? What do you fear will happen to your health care under Obama's plan? How do you feel about Obama now that the bill has been signed into law? What's your reaction to the Republicrats' weak response? Do you think Obamacare will be stopped in the courts? Why or why not? What angers or frightens you most about the way in which Obamacare was enacted? Who is the most hated political figure to have arisen out of this process? This is the Savage Nation, and the reason I'm tired, I'll tell you when I come back.
Savage.
It is fitting that Congress passed this historic legislation this week. For as we mark the turning spring, we also mark a new season in America. In a few moments, when I sign this bill, all of the overheated rhetoric over reform will finally confront the reality.
All right, we got it. You're a great man, and everyone loves you, and let's all rally around the flag, and let's put any protesters down and let's smear them. Let's get the George Soros smear machine ready. You know, we don't need internment camps. What we need is the U.S. press to take care of that. And we'll see. We'll see what happens. But right now, my prediction is his ratings will go up because people like a winner and they're afraid of them right now. People are afraid of them. But let me explain to you another. Like, I was driving around today on a freeway in Florida out of Miami. I happen to be on the East Coast now, just not that you're interested. I move around a lot. And I look in other cars as you're going by, see who's in the other car. I look at people and I ask myself a question. How do they feel today about this? The average schmuck done enough. What does he know? Putz driving around, a hat on. Where's his mind is making a buck. Wherever he's going, who knows where they're going? Rushing this, that. Do you think he really cares about this whole thing? You think he's as involved as you are or me? I mean, we're political, you know, involved here. We're deeply enmeshed. You wouldn't listen to the show if you were a normal person. Anyone listening to this show is not normal. Either you're in the media or you're a political fanatic. And so you know what's going on. But I'm saying the average person doesn't really know what's going on. So you ask yourself, okay, they don't know what's going on. They don't know that he used dictatorial processes to get where he was. He doesn't know who Nancy Pelosi, never heard of her even. They don't even know who she is. They just see some old woman with big teeth with a lot of makeup. You say Nancy Pelosi, they think you're talking about Bela Lugosi's grandmother. They don't know. So you ask the average person, are you in favor of health care? Yes. Why? Because they think they're going to get something for nothing. They don't have a business, most people. They don't pay taxes. It's a small percentage of Americans who pay taxes who support the whole country. So I have a different theory. The reason this is happening to us is that everyone can vote. And everyone votes equally. I was thinking about it. Now, don't get me wrong. This will never happen. But I was thinking, shouldn't the person who pays more taxes have more votes? In other words, if you go to a sporting event and you pay more money for a better ticket, don't you sit up front? Yeah. Say you go to a boxing match, you pay $7,000. The same guy in the back pays $40. So you think the guy who pays $40 and the guy who pays $7,000 should sit in the same seat or should be, let's say, a lottery of who pays it? No, the guy pays $40,000, $40 sits in the back, and the guy pays $7,000, sits in the front. So I'm thinking, like, I'm paying more taxes than the guy in the car next to me. Why the hell does he have the same vote I do? Of course the schmuck's going to vote for freebies. I'm paying for it. Of course he wants free medical care. Of course he wants another loan from Freddie Mae and Fannie Crack. Of course he wants Freddie Crack to give him another loan. Freddie Crack gave, you know what I'm saying? That's how Freddie Crack bought his house, through Barney Frank's Fannie and Freddie. Of course he wants something for nothing. That's why we're finished as a nation. It's not that there's a universal vote. No, no, that's not the point. It's the fact that the man who pays no taxes has the exact same vote as the man who pays millions in taxes or thousands in taxes or hundreds of thousands in taxes or whatever your number is. Why should he have the same power you do at the voting station? They say, well, that's the fundamentals of democracy. Well, then you're finished. Then you're finished because democracy ultimately collapses in on itself. In every place it has been tried, such a system as ours has lasted a few hundred years and it's been destroyed from within, primarily through this method of granting an equal vote to every human being because they're all going to vote themselves free things from the government, meaning from the people who actually produce the wealth of the nation. So in other words, if you want to quote me in my entirety, if you don't mind. Why should that guy in that car who pays no taxes, may not even be working, have the same vote that I, Michael Savage, do? I should have more votes. It should be sort of proportionate to the amount of tax money I pay up to a certain point. Don't you think? It's not going to happen. Don't you understand this is theoretical? Aren't we allowed to have a theoretical conversation? That's illegal, too, in America now? Ooh, Michael said that you should deny the vote. It was all racist. Because I didn't say anything about race. You did, you psycho, you whack job, left-wing, white trash, you. You left-wing, white trash. I know who the left-wingers are. They're the ones egging on the entire country. The commies. The Marxist, Leninist vermin. I can name the groups one after the other, and I'll name the names one after the other, and they're the ones who'll put you in an internment camp. It's all going to be in my new book. And guess what? The book's going to come out just in time before books will be outlawed under Obama. Oh, it can't happen here? Oh, it can't happen here, huh? Under this guy?
Savage.
Set in motion reforms that generations of Americans have fought for and marched for and hungered to see. It'll take 4 years to implement fully many of these reforms.
Just in time for you to run again.
We need to implement them responsibly.
All right, we heard it all. Yeah, it's all a scam. It's the Pelosi scam, the Pelosi scheme. But how much money does a person really need is a real question. You know, a lot of people are frightened. Like I read this morning that a big advertising guy named Jerry Delafina in New York said he's putting his $40 million mansion in the Hamptons up for sale because Obama's going to tax it away anyway. And he said he doesn't have to spend the summers in the Hamptons anymore. He'll spend them in Capri. So a lot of rich people are freaked out that Obama's going to come after them. That's probably true because Obama is a Marxist-Leninist that in his heart. All his friends are Marxist-Leninists. He was trained by Marxist-Leninists. His mentors are Marxist-Leninists, and we know where Marxists lead us. So what's the big mystery? Well, you have to have a big discussion about it. You saw what just happened. But this guy is so smart, and his Marxist-Leninist cadre around them are so clever that they use Nancy Pelosi, who thinks she's using them. This is how it works. Both of these gangs think they're using each other. Excuse me, both of these interest groups think they're using each other. But in fact, at the end of the day, he's the president, not her. And my prediction is that within a very, very short period of time, she'll be moved aside. She's already served a purpose. She's damaged goods. She's going to be the lightning rod of hatred in this country. She's so hated. Women particularly hate this woman. Hate her. To begin with, women don't like women who are more powerful than them. That's to start with. Now you got a woman who's more powerful than most women who gloats in her power. It's the second cardinal rule of politics that she broke, which is the... You see, the powerful person should never show their power. You read the history of any nation. The minute you start gloating in your power, you're finished. I don't care whether you go back to the Roman Caesars. The minute you start reveling in your power and lording it over the people start to hate you. They hate you. And even if you are power mad, what you do is you play humble. She can't. It's not in her, you know, her DNA, let's put it to you that way. So they're going to push her aside. The next speaker will be who knows. But how much money do you really need? I go on my website, and we linked up from Mail Online. World's cleverest man turns down $1 million prize after solving one of the mathematics' greatest puzzles. A Russian awarded $1 million for solving one of the most intractable problems in mathematics said yesterday that he does not want the money. No need for greed. A rare photo of bearded and reclusive genius Dr. Grigory Perelman. Said to be the world's cleverest man, Dr. Grigory Perelman, 44, lives as a recluse in a bare, cockroach-infested flat in St. Petersburg. He said through the closed door, "I have all I want." So he solves a major problem. He posts a solution on the internet. He wins $1 million. He says, "I don't want it." 4 years ago, the math genius failed to turn up to receive his prestigious Fields Medal from the International Mathematical Union for solving the problem. And listen to what he said now. We're talking about money now. "I'm not interested in money or fame. I don't want to be on display like an animal in a zoo. I'm not a hero of mathematics. I'm not even that successful. That is why I don't want to have anybody looking at me." Neighbor Vera said, "I was once in his flat and I was astounded. He only has a table, a stool, and a bed with a dirty mattress, which was left by previous owners. Alcoholics have sold a flat to him." Now, what does that tell you? I don't know what it tells you. I mean, you can make anything you want out of this. I don't know. I don't know what it says. I don't know. What would you say about a thing like that? And the guy looks like probably he's a little bit on the nuts side. Not all geniuses are nuts, by the way. I used to think that if you're a genius, you have to be crazy. It's not true. But some people are geniuses and crazy. You know what I'm saying? I guarantee a lot of girls would like to date him if he took the $1 million, no matter what cockroaches or not. I think even Paris Hilton might date him, in my opinion, with the fact that no one wants to listen to her anymore. She could go looking for him and encourage him to get the $1 million. But he has no feelings for money. No need for money. Turning down $1 million. So now he has all the publicity he wants, and I guarantee you that Donald Trump will put him on America's Most Wanted or some whatever he runs. I have no idea what his show is. Is he in charge of America's? Is he Sheriff? What's his name? Sheriff Donald? Is he Sheriff Donald? I don't know what he does. He has a bouffant. He has a nice buffet up there in Palm Beach. No need for greed. A rare photo of bearded and reclusive genius. I'm focused on this for a reason. You know what the reason is? Because in my thinking, this whole thing about Obama is about money. When you actually think about it, it's those of us who have, we earned it. We didn't take it from anyone. And those who don't, they have nothing. Either they're too stupid, too lazy, or they're unlucky. In either case, they have nothing or very little, and they want to take it from those of us who have it. It's always about money. There's nothing else involved. I mean, when you think about it, everything is about money. Sure, we heard the root of all evil. Let's go to Mexico for a minute. They come here for what? They come here for the money, okay? And we want to keep them out. Why? Because they're taking jobs, and they're taking social services that cost us money. So look at the drug wars going on in Mexico. They're chopping up cops, putting them in body bags, killing the heads of state, right? What is that about? Money. Tell me what is not about money. Go to the Middle East. Palestinians versus the Israelis. What is that about? Money. Who's going to control the water? Who's going to control the land? Fundamentally, again, about money. So where does that lead us? It comes right back again to the question of how much do you really need? At a certain point, it comes down to what Aristotle and Onassis said, which is this: if you're going to get raped, you may as well enjoy it. Now, how do I jump from that to that? Because I have a kaleidoscopic mind with many, many chambers with a lot of knowledge, and I think it fits. If it doesn't, well, call the guys with the butterfly nets. I think it fit. I think it fit nicely when I said, when I quoted Onassis, I said, if you're going to get raped, you may as well enjoy it. Now, why did he say that? Why did one of the wealthiest men in the world, Aristotle Onassis, a man as ugly as, he looked like a sea creature with glasses, and he married Jackie Kennedy. Why? Do I have to tell you why she married him? She married him for his looks. She married him for his big nose. She married him for his big fingers. She married him for his big... She married him because of his money. She didn't marry him because she loved him. I mean, even I read the prenup on that marriage. You can't believe that. He was allowed to have intimate relations with her like at 3 o'clock on a Thursday. It was unbelievable. It wasn't even like it was once a week at a certain time. It was astounding how they worked it out. "Listen, you beast, I think you're disgusting. I'm in a social advancement for you. I'm the former first lady. I'll be with you, you ugly beast. But here's the deal. You can't touch me except Thursdays after dinner. And for 5 minutes only." I mean, it was something crazy like that. They had a very successful marriage as a result. He knew his place, and she knew when to expect the beast. But I'm getting off the track. See, he said, one of the richest men in the world said, if you're going to get raped, you may as well enjoy it. Now, what does that mean? Why did he say it? Because if you watched the biography of Aristotle Onassis, he was actually raped when his village, his Greek village, was invaded by the, oh yes, here we go again, the invading Muslims, the Ottoman Turks, say Ottoman, it's a nice word for Muslim. The Ottoman Turks raided Greece. They burnt churches to the ground with everyone in it. In his case, they let him live because he was a good-looking young boy, and the leader of the soldiers liked him as a lover, and he gave him a choice, either live with me and be my lover, or I'll kill you and your family. So he had to be raped, in other words. Do you understand what I'm saying to you, the things that can happen to you in this life because of political changes in a country? Do you have any idea how the danger we're in right now? You think this is only about healthcare, you're out of your damn mind. This is a revolution. Obama is a social revolutionary. I use words like Marxist, Lenin. You don't know what that means. The average person whizzing by in a car doesn't know Marx from Lenin from Schmenin. It means nothing to you. Just think of him as a radical social revolutionary who would like to take everything that you worked for and take it away from you and give it to people that he deems should have it, mainly him and his cronies. And that's the same with every one of them in the power structure. If you think that he means he's going to give it to the poor, you're crazy. What you don't fundamentally understand about Marxists is that they don't care about the people. You think they're taking from the rich to give to the poor. That's because you're a product of the American miseducation system. They're not going to take from the rich to give to the poor. They're going to take from the middle class to destroy or shrink the middle class slowly but surely. Now, why do they want to do it, and why is Michael Savage saying such a crazy thing? Because I've studied social revolutions. Marxist-Leninists despise the bourgeoisie. What is the bourgeoisie? The middle class. Why does he want to shrink the middle class? To create a two-class society, the poor and the rulers. The rulers are, the members of the ruling class would be, he and his supporters, the Democrat Party, in other words, the Politburo of the ex-Soviet Union. They're the ones who had the chauffeured limousines and the bodyguards and the dachas out in the country. And then there were the peasants who were fighting over one salami in a butcher store. That's you in 10 years. Unless this man is stopped by the U.S. Supreme Court, I'll be right back.
Savage.
So, is America closer to death row after losing this battle over socialized medicine? We don't know. But I predicted earlier in the hour on the Savage Nation that Obama's ratings will go up, not down. Now, every pundit in the media is saying the opposite. I'm not doing this because I want to be clever or that I'm trying to be contrarian, because I'm usually right. I'm usually right, and I'm going to tell you right now, I predict he'll have a slight bump because he won. It's his victory. Janet in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation from WOR. What is on your mind, Janet?
How are you? Hello?
Yes, what's on your mind, Janet?
Yes, Dr. Savage, unless the American people have a mental problem to have this man rating go up.
You're saying his ratings are going to go up?
No, you are saying that, but unless something is wrong with the American people.
Yeah, well, there is something wrong, and it's called the American media, which is no longer doing the job that it is supposed to do, which is act as a watchdog. They're acting as lapdogs, Janet. I predict that his ratings will go up, so stay on the line, Janet. Beowulf, are you there? My
right
producer,
here, sir.
Beowulf Rockland.
Absolutely.
Beowulf, can you check the Rasmussen latest poll and tell me what it is? I'm going to go. I went out on a limb on this. What does the latest Rasmussen poll show on Obama between yesterday and today?
Between yesterday and today, the strong approval rating for Obama has actually gone up by 2%.
Okay, give me a bell. A gun. I'm right. Oh, I like that guy. Where'd you get that? Let me say it again. So I was right. His ratings went up, Bill. Okay, good. Very good. Now, if someone calls with a prediction that turns out to be wrong after Beowulf comes on with the correct answer, we're going to play the buzzer, right? The other one? Let me hear the bad one. You have the bad one? You don't have a bad yet? No, come on, Schmendrick, stop it. No, stop it. I want a buzzer that goes, ah, okay. Oh, well, you don't have to play the same one and expect the people to know the difference. Anyway, I was right again. That's all you have to know. Why listen to me if I'm wrong? See, even if you don't agree with me, you have to listen to me if you know that I'm right most of the time. That's the beauty of it. Let's say you're a devout left-wing red diaper doper baby. You grew up with linoleum and plaster tablecloths. Your father was a union worker. Your mother worked for in the needle trade. They hated America. They hated the country. They hated white bread. They hated everything about the nation. They hated George Washington. They said he was a racist pig. When they saw the flag, your father spit on it. He's like, Panyamaish Paruski. And he went on and on. Even though he fled tyranny, came here and hated the country. Let's say you grew up like that. You still like listening to me. Why? Because I'm right most of the time, so you may as well know what the opposition is thinking. That's all. And secondly, the lefties don't know what they're doing. They can't predict. They all said that Obama's ratings would go down, by the way, the blogosphere. So I was right. Margaret in Florida, you are on the Savage Nation, and what is on your mind, Margaret?
My mind is that, first of all, I want to tell you what an honor it is to speak to you.
All right, that's very nice, terrific. I'm too exhausted to even understand why, but what else is on your mind?
With our high and mighty leader of this country, we're going to be so deep in debt that our great-great-grandchildren are not going to get out of it.
We know all of that. None of that is new, Margaret. We know that he's bankrupted the country even worse than Bush did. But the issue is not the facts, because you're not going to get them from him or the media. You know that.
That's right.
And so how do you feel today knowing that?
Chance we have.
That's right. All right. So we all know that. What else is new? The price of beans. What time is it already? Is it time to go home? It's 51 minutes after the hour. I'm not tired at all. I'm beyond tired. I'm exhausted. Do you know why I'm explaining? I'm in the media, right? So, I mean, this is like going on for months. I mean, it's a year now, right? The whole day. But now it's like for the last few weeks, healthcare. Nancy Pelosi, those teeth, the lipstick, the makeup, the rouge. She reminded me of a fifth grade teacher that gave me migraines. I couldn't take another minute of her. I could literally almost faint every time she appeared. And then there was him. Then there he was, the narcissist in chief, the lunatic in chief, the lunatic college teacher, out of control Obama. Then there was slap happy Joe Biden. Then there was the other cast of characters. There was the maniac. Oh, it went on and on. I had to look at these faces. Then on the other side, there were the phony check pants. I'm angry Republicans. We'll stop you if we have to stop you, no matter what we do, even though you're doing everything that Bush wanted to do but couldn't get away with. We're going to do what the people wanted. We're drinking tea now. We've given up cigarettes and coffee. And I'll tell you, in the 12th hour, when it comes down to it, we're going to take this right up to the Supreme Court, who absolutely appalled it. And the reason they'll uphold it, even though we have a 5-4 majority, is because they're all full of crap on the Supreme Court as well, because they know which way the wind blows and which way the demographics of America are, which way the demographics are. And they know that they got to go which way the demographics are. Albany, New York. Lance, you're on the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Michael. I just want to say that I listen to a bunch of different talk radio guys, and I can't wait to rush home and get you on the computer.
Thank God I'm on the computer.
Listen to you during the daytime on the ride home. It's staticky.
You had to give me a zents. What? You had to zets me. First it was up, then it was down. I can't control the signal in Albany.
The whole ride home is through static and everything.
Oh, again, number two. Well, what are you listening on, like at a marginal station in Albany?
No, see, I'm really from Buffalo. And I'm from Buffalo, and I can't get my local guys to get you.
Is it still snowing in Buffalo as late as it is now?
It just snowed here 5 minutes ago.
Bingo. See, that proves there's global warming, whatever. Is Al Gore anywhere to be seen?
No, he's hiding.
Lance, thank you. Thank you very, very much. San Francisco, my hometown of San Francisco, with my new sports station, 860. Juan, thanks for listening. What's on your mind, Juan?
Hey, Mike, I'm a 35-year-old Mexican-American who, when I was younger, you know, was one of the people who was raised to hate America. And when I started working and getting into paying taxes and everything, I ended up listening to you. I work out in the field, and you really changed my mind on everything about how it's going.
Look, this is exactly right. I'm an immigrant son. I've worked for everything I have. I never stole a dime from anybody. It's all earned through sweat of my own brow and my luck, okay? But Juan, let me tell you something. You know, as a Mexican-American, that everything you have earned is your own. And it should not be the government's right to take from you and give it to others. That's fundamentally what we're talking about. Is that right?
That's correct. And that's why I changed my life and I started working and paying taxes. And I work for a large conglomerate that runs the world, and they're trying to get rid of us, even though they make billions of dollars. Because the American dream of white America safety was sold out by these guys. So I believe they're doing this so they can get whatever they can now, because everything's in the process. Watch the Channel 2 news locally. It's telling you Vallejo police are going down. San Carlos has to get rid of their whole police station. I mean, it's crazy.
Oh, what you're saying is the economic downturn, the first people they're firing are cops, and it's creating a public safety crisis in the state of California. And you think that this is not by accident?
Oh, no way. Come on now. You got to be blind to think that. There's no way.
Yes, why don't they cut other services first instead of police? I agree with you.
Well, they're trying.
And, you know, one, you raised something that most Americans don't know. Under the mayor of San Francisco, Gavin Nuisance, do you know what happened in the drug lab 2 weeks ago? Did you hear this story?
Oh, I already know. They're all crooked. My family
was... There was a drug lab in the city of San Francisco. The police department has a drug lab. Instead of manning it with an officer of the department, they gave it to an outsource, to a civilian. She was snorting and stealing the drugs. I think 178 cases now against drug dealers have been thrown out because of that. And Gavin Nuisance doesn't take any of the blame. It doesn't even go beyond. It's astounding to me that the media has covered up one of the greatest scandals. The city is more corrupt than New Orleans was at its worst. The city is worse than it was under than Chicago was under Al Capone. And this guy gets away with it. It's amazing. Now he's running for lieutenant governor. What's that about, Juan?
He's already a pawn for the Rasta and the people that got this stuff going on.
Rasta man. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I have to tell you, he is a decent person and a person that you do not have to be scared as President of the United States. Now, I just...
The American public overwhelmingly voted for socialism when they elected President Obama. The president promised the American people health reform when he ran. He was overwhelmingly elected running on that, and he has delivered what he promised. I don't understand Republicans saying this is against the will of the American people. They voted for President Obama, who said this was going to be one of the first things he would do, and he's done the first hurdle of that.
You tell him, Al, you're a reliable man, and honest as they come.
Exchanges will be created, a competitive marketplace.
Another honest one.
Uninsured people and small businesses will finally be able to purchase affordable quality insurance.
Dave,
they will be able to
there.
Be part of a big pool and get the same good deal that members of Congress
have. The whole country's a big fool.
That's what's going to happen under this reform.
Now give me some music because I'm not ready yet. I got to warm up to say something now after listening to that rubbish. There was McCain wanting La Raza to love him, saying he's going to give a pathway for citizenship to 40 million, 30 million illegal aliens. That was in 08. Now he's changed his tune. Then the rest you know already. Al Sharpton already, a political philosopher. He told you what you don't know, and you elected him for socialism, and you absolutely wanted it. You lobbied for it. You dreamed of it. Ever since your grandparents came to America, you've been dreaming of Leninism and Marxism in the public square. And thank God Obama came along, because he gave you exactly what you've been dreaming of all your life, which is a Soviet system, the United Soviet States of America. And thank God he gave you exactly what you wanted, says Al Sharpton, as you know, a very reliable source and an honest man, as honest as they come, as honest as Abe Lincoln himself. And then finally you heard Michael Savage intervene and say, give me some music. because I'm tired. So give me some music because I'm tired. I'm just tired. It's been 3 months, man. This health care. We know it's a screwing. That's all. No matter what mumbo jumbo they throw at us, we know it's a good screwing for anyone who makes a buck. That's all. What are you going to do about it? I got nothing clever to say about it. I mean, music. It doesn't tie in. I don't know what they picked that for, Still of the Night. Yes, in some way they think it. Yeah, I'm not going to talk about music. Let's not get comedic in the political arena right now. I'm not in the mood. I make mistakes when I'm tired. When I try to get too clever when I'm tired, error, hit the error button. If you're a small business owner, you're frightened because this gang is, this administration, this regime, the capital regime, this administration is so clever that they put out so many carrots and so many sticks, you don't know what you're going to get hit with, a carrot or a stick. Put that on YouTube. They have put out so many carrots and so many sticks in this so-called maze of a plan that no one knows whether it's going to be the carrots or the sticks that hit them. Let's say you're an employer with more than 50 workers. You're going to face a fine of up to $2,000 per worker. If you do not offer coverage to low-income workers, you will be eligible for public subsidies to obtain insurance. I don't know what that means. I have no idea what that means. But then there's carrots. What's the carrot? States will create large market exchanges or pools to make it easier for businesses and individuals to bargain with insurers to obtain more affordable coverage. I don't know what that means. I have no idea what this actually comes down to. All I know is that the people have worked all their lives for something and have a little extra for themselves and their children. I'm going to give it away to the bums, the deadbeats, the illegal aliens, and the losers, the junkies, the alcoholics, and the milk drinkers. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. How do you feel about what Obama and Pelosi have done to America? What's your reaction to Obama's self-congratulatory signing speech this morning? The best of these questions on the Savage Nation today that I think is what angers or frightens you most about the way in which Obamacare was enacted. And here's the better one, because I know how to play your emotions, because I have to play your emotions in order to get you to think even altogether, in order to ever get you to think at all. I'm going to ask you this. Who is the most hated political figure to arise out of this process? That's an easy one. Which political figure is now the most hated in America as a result of this? These shenanigans. As a result of these shenanigans, who is the most hated political figure? I'll tell you who's the biggest loser. You want to hear this one? You're never going to believe this. This is so out of left field, only I could come up with it. I've been watching this from the side. Biggest political loser of all this? Hillary Clinton. Bung. Why? I'm watching this. She starts a war with Israel. She goes out there and starts a fight with Israel, basically threatening their survival, cutting off military aid, in order to upstage Nancy Pelosi. As you know, it's always a woman thing. She knows she doesn't stand a chance upstaging Obama. So she goes after Nancy Pelosi, trying to upstage them, and she comes out with egg all over her face. Picks a fight with the only ally we have in the Middle East that we can rely upon, other than, you know, about 2% of the Jordanian population. The other 99% would like to hang them like Mussolini. And she's the biggest loser politically in this whole scene. Pelosi, on the other hand, is the most hated American figure in 100 years. Now, that goes with being the most powerful. You cannot wield this kind of power and gloat over it. The way to wield power is to play it down, not up. You got to be humble. But because she's out of her league, believe it or not, she's out of her league. She has no idea how to manage the power that she has. So she gloats in it, says crazy things. Saint, I don't know who she prayed to the other day, St. Joseph? I thought she was praying to a St. Joseph's aspirin for children bottle. I don't know what she was talking about. St. Joseph the worker? What is she talking about? And the media says nothing. If an actual Christian says one word to do with Jesus, they go insane. The ACLU suddenly comes screaming out of the sex acts they're involved in. They come screaming, wait a minute, I heard something about religion from a political figure. A conservative said something about Christ. They think, let me get out of it. I got to get going. I got to file a lawsuit. We got to get the flags down. We got to get the Ten Commandments burned. Make sure the schools have no references to God. The minute they say any, but if Nancy Pelosi says something about a Catholic saint and she brings in 70 orders of sisters and the vermin in the media don't say a word. All of a sudden, there's no separation of church and state because it's good. That's good church and state. to the fifth column, formerly known as the fourth estate. Mark it down. I said it. Not stolen yet by the golfers? Okay, whatever. Move on. What a long day I had today. I'm tired. Drove down to Miami, an hour on a highway. Drove back from Miami, an hour on a highway. In Miami. I was in Miami. My father was in Miami. God rest his soul. 40 years ago, he said it stunk. Because he stayed in those little hotels in South Beach. Remember the movie with Al Pacino, Scarface? Remember how it down in there with the old people sitting with the rockers? And that shootout was the great one where she has the machine gun under the bed. You know the movie Scarface. Great movie, by the way. Those little old hotels, you know what happened. They boomed. They became yuppie hotels. You could have bought one for around $12 plus a mattress. At a certain point, it was like junkie infested. Then all of a sudden, some smart guy from New York came down and said, you know, they're nice Art Deco hotels. That's ready. Bingo, and they became fashionable. But in that period, so he was down, he hated it. It was polluted, noisy, horrible. The water was there. Now, it's not that bad. The water's not bad. It's clean. You see manatees now because of the environmental cleanup. I'm definitely a conservationist. They're doing the right thing. I know most of you don't understand. You don't understand it. That if there was no government interference, every fish would be dead. The rivers would be brown or black. The sky would be sooty like mid-1600 England. A government has to control you. You're a beast. You must be controlled on the environmental level. You'll kill everything. You know that human is a devourer. We're devourers. Don't give me the garbage. Thou shalt go forth. I read it too. Didn't mean kill everything while you were eating a duck. It didn't mean kill the mother duck and the grandmother duck along the way. In fact, the Native American, when he would go hunting for a certain medicinal plant to use in a cure, when he'd come upon the first member of that species that he was looking for, he would bypass it. He was so wise. Why? Why did he bypass the... Let's say he was looking for a plant called the Ooga Booga plant to cure a migraine headache, which he got from listening to Obama. He'd come up, he'd go in the woods, he'd look around, there's the first Ooga Booga plant, and he'd look at it and say, I'm not going to pick that one. Why? He was so wise because he knew that it could be the only one of its species left in that forest. So he left it. If he didn't find another one, he didn't pick the Ooga Booga plant. The American, on the other hand, will kill the first Ooga Booga plant, poison the earth underneath it, and then urinate on the ground unless he's stopped by the government. Well, Mike, you're really veering off to the left now, aren't you? I don't know. I detect communism in you. What are you sounding like? Some environmental wacko, Mike. Well, I care what I sound like. I'm not sitting here watching a teleprompter. Just telling you like it is. I know what it's all about. You're the kind of schmuck who likes to use a ski-doo out in the woods. I don't go there anymore because of you. I don't even hike in the wilderness anymore because I don't want a moron racing by on a motorized scooter in the middle of a forest. I don't even go hiking. I used to go up to the Lake Tahoe. I'd hike in the wilderness. You could hike with snowshoes. You wouldn't hear a sound. Like, it's like Sergeant Preston of the Yukon, you know? I would teach my kids survival. Like, let's go out in the woods. You never know what's going to happen. It could all come down. Let's go out with the guns. It's like, you know, the breeze would be blowing over the top of the snow. You're like, Dad, how far are we going to go, man? What if the weather changes? Don't worry, son. I have a compass with me. You know, then you unleash the .45 on a can or whatever. It was a great experience. Now you go like, there's Joe Schmuck going, who wants to be out there anymore? It's like ski-doos on the water. Hey, look at me. I got shorts on. Yahoo! Me and the white trash girl on the ski-doo. There you go. What nice sounds they make at night when you're sitting there on a veranda enjoying a drink in Florida. Watch a moron go by. Well, how about another little sport here in Florida? You ready for the next sport that they let the morons have? Idiots on motorized parasails, the lowest of the low, are the schmucks on motorized parasails. You got people sitting on the beach enjoying a breeze. There goes the schmuck. He's ogling the girl's breasts, and he's flying by, thinks he's Icarus. So you say to them, oh, no, they're allowed to do it. What do you mean allowed to do it? You're protecting the sea turtles. You're protecting the manatees. You're protecting the environment. But this schmuck can fly by on a beach with a lawnmower on his back and a parachute. How? Why is the FAA not involved? Why is the government not cracking down on these schmucks? I found out why. Because they paid off a local official in 2003 with a piece of paper. What else is new under the sun? I'll be right back. Savage.
I want to assure you that we will enact comprehensive immigration reform so that we can put people, after they have to do certain things, obviously, give them a path to citizenship in this country as part of an overall immigration reform package. That's what I'll do.
I have to tell you, he is a decent person and a person that you do not have to be scared as President of the United States. Now, I just...
There are 50,000 Irish men and women who are in this country illegally at this time, who are hardworking people who want to become citizens. And I want to assure you that we will enact comprehensive immigration reform so that we can put people, after they have to do certain things, obviously, give them a path to citizenship.
Now, you see, it's all about granting amnesty to Irish river dancers. That's what, it's not about illegals from Mexico or Guatemala or Salvador or Nicaragua. It's about Irish river dancers that that the amnesty is for. Now, that was John McCain speaking at La Raza in 2008 when he thought that they would put him over the top. And then speaking at a rally in Scranton, PA about immigration reform in 2008, blah, blah, blah. The fact of the matter is we do our homework. We report and you decide. Actually, that's not true. Fox News says they report and you decide. I say I decide, you report what I decided. This is the Savage Nation is different than Fox News. They report, you decide. I have a different decision. I made a decision, and then you report what I said. That's all. Play some Irish music for me. Will you get me going here a little bit? One more ride on that freeway. I think I'm just East Coast, West. That's it, the whole thing. You don't have any river dancing? Can't you get me in the mood? I wanted to tell the story of how I think river dancing evolved. Now, the way river dancing evolved, I got into this once, was the
was one morning in July.
I guess not river
dancing.
All right, and that's fine. Very funny. You set the mood anyway. It's close. It's as close as like saying Brahms as opposed to crack music. But so anyway, river dancing. Remember it was big about 5 years ago? Everywhere you turn, click, then a clock, then a click with the skirts and the lift, the click, then they were coming over him, then a click, then a clock, then a click, then a clock. You remember what went on? Everywhere you turn, like Ed Sullivan was dead 40 years. Wherever you turn, there was another river dancing group. Click, then a clock. And there they were with the big shoes and the check skirts and all the pervs. Yeah, I'm watching it for the dancing. Then a river dance. Here they are. 13-year-old river dancers from Ireland. So where did they go? What happened to that phase? But the way I figured that river dancing started, because I'm a trained anthropologist, by the way, it's very simple. You put two and two together like everything else. In the ancient days, there was like a king or like a warlord in like Cork County, and every region had a county and a king. He can kill everybody with his bare hands. He was the kind of guy who was so big he threw logs. 6'9" was the minimum size to be the king of the area in Ireland. The little guys were like the sages. They didn't get killed. They were smart, the little skinny guys. How do you think they survived? They were always like wise. What do you think they didn't break their necks for? All right, come on over here. We had all the girls we want. Now let's listen to the poets. They're always like little wiry guys. All right, poet, entertain me around the fire. I'll break your neck if you don't make me happy. Make sure you make me happy. I'll snap your neck like a breadstick. So the guy talked as fast as he could to entertain the 6'9". You know what I'm saying? But the way it started was the 6'9" through 6'12" or 7-foot Irishman. He went down. He says, all right, the entire village, get the young girls and have them dance for me later on around the fire because we're going to have a little party here. They were the original Hell's Angels. I mean, don't be a fool. It evolves. Things evolve. Now, what I'm getting at is you don't have to be 6'10" anymore. All you need is the media in your hands to get away with the same thing under the guise of whatever you want to call it. So fundamentally, nothing's ever changed. We still have the strong leader protected by a compliant press, backed up by a vicious woman, and surrounded by jackals who know they're going to benefit from this directly. And beyond all of them are the rest of us, scared out of our minds that they're about to take over our lives and destroy our freedom. Other than that, nothing has happened in this country since Al Sharpton won the presidency. Hey, where's old Jesse Jackson coming out with the... Hey, quick, Martha, turn up the radio. He's back. He's back. Quick, Martha, turn it back up. Those ads are over. He's back. Remember, it's the ads that pay the bills. Now, that is river dance music you're hearing in the background on the Savage Nation. And I understand that that's not the music That is not the music that will be played at the White House as they serve ravioli puttanesca to Israeli diplomats next week. I mean, you got to admit, I got a good sense of humor once in a while. When I'm delirious, I get funnier. I'm beyond delirious. Right now, the show is... I'm looking at takeout food at the same time. What I'm going to eat the minute I'm off the air. I'm so hungry. I had a light lunch. I'm not good at light lunch. My schedule's off. The east-west time difference. Please, don't come in with a menu, sir. Takeout guy came in and asked me what I want to order. Can you imagine? On a radio show? A live radio show. What is Matt George? Obama tanning tax starts now. Oh, that Biden, some piece of... What? Ooh. You know, like toaster faces. But Biden, what happened to him? He used to be reasonably intelligent. How did this happen? Indoor tanning salons will charge customers a 10% tax beginning today. And just one of James American sees all the U.S. healthcare. What is that, Matt? What is that a big deal? I don't understand why that's a big deal. First of all, what moron would get a tan indoors? Who in the world would go to an indoor tanning parlor but a lunatic narcissist, number one? I never... in my life would imagine a person would use an indoor. I don't even go in the sun, the indoor tanning. I've reached a certain age. I've had already the bouts with the cutting and with the burning and the nitrous oxide. And do you want it to cut? Do you want it to burn? 10 times already off the head, they've evaded skin cancer. Catching it early without Obamacare. I paid for the dermatologist myself. I have the best, a woman dermatologist in San Francisco. Oh, God. This woman's a healer. While she's cutting you, you enjoy it. Because she doesn't mean to hurt you. Then there are people who hurt you even though they don't have to. This one doesn't hurt you when she can. I like women doctors. They're very good. 10% tax on big deal. How much could that be? Why would they do that? I mean, how much are you going to raise from a thing like that? $12? How many tanning parlors are there in America that are 10%? I tell you what I think happened here. This is punishment to some guy who must have insulted Nancy Pelosi once when she was in a tanning parlor. And he must have said something to her like, madam, please put on your smock. I think this is some kind of payback from when she was a high school or a college graduate. And somebody in the tanning, because this doesn't make sense to me. How many tanning parlors are there? What's the total gross? What would you imagine total gross? Every tanning parlor in America, put them into a bundle. Every place you could imagine. The total business could not exceed, I'm guessing now off the top of my head, $600 million. I'm telling you the max. I'm pretty good with I didn't look it up. So 10% going to get out of the cigarette. They're going to get $60 million from tanning parlors? What's next? Like tire shops? You mean a 1% tax on the grease that they put on a tire iron? Anyone who uses Vaseline, 1% tax on every use of Vaseline. This is what I don't allow. The part I don't like the most so far, insurers are going to be required by September to begin providing health coverage to kids. Listen to this. Kids, up to the age of 26. Kids, you hear? 26-year-old deadbeat pothead in the house. Now I got to pay for his health care. The schmuck, instead of him getting a job in a warehouse somewhere and making the illegal alien go home, he's going to stay home and smoke dope, and the mother's going to, what would you like for breakfast today? Marty, did you look for a job? No, Ma, leave me alone. Marty, please look for a job. Your father had a heart attack from you sitting around the house. You're 25 years old. Even Obama can't extend it anymore. Yes, he can, Ma. We hear they're going to extend it to age 32 during the next cycle. Joe Biden said it the other day while saying the F word. Medicare recipients will receive a $250 debate for donuts. I don't care. The $940 billion overhaul subsidizes coverage for uninsured Americans. Uninsured Americans. I'd like to tell you what I think of uninsured Americans. Yeah, uninsured Americans, and my heart bleeds for them. How come I was insured when I couldn't afford it? How come I made sure I bought a pie? I joined like Kaiser. I had young children. I joined Kaiser in case of a catastrophic illness or an accident. I never used the quacks there because I knew that they were dangerous. The only guy I ever know who went to work for Kaiser was a drug addict of the lowest order. Probably listens fanatically. He even boasted when he went back to medical school late in life. He said, I'm doing this specifically to have access to the drugs. He said it to me because his mentor was a communist at a certain university I knew who used to boast that he took drugs out of the medical cabinet. Another great prize of a commie. The overhaul. Participants in Medicare. I can't follow this. It's like a blur. Couples more than 250 million increase in Medicare payroll tax employee coverage. A tax on high-cost Cadillac policies won't go into effect until 2018. How'd they come up with that? You know how long that is from now in an election cycle? I guess he'll still be president. The insurance industry also raises about $60 billion additional fees on the helmet. The bill is expected to have expanded health insurance coverage to 32 million people, according to UBS's Harris. The U.S. Health and Human Services Department, ZHIA, will have 2 years to set penalties on hospitals with high readmission rates. What? And no longer to test new... What do you mean high readmission rates? That's the hospital's fault? That illegals keep coming back for running nose? Who made that idea up? The part that scares me the most is the destruction of the pharmaceutical industry. I don't make a dime from them. Let me be very clear. I do not have any sponsors in the big pharma, okay? But I know what it costs to bring a drug to market. I was once in pharmacology. I looked for cures in the jungles. I spent years, you know, trying to, like, save the world, whatever. And I collected hundreds and hundreds of possibilities, and they're in herbaria all over the world, including a great collection at the, heartbreakingly, at the Kew Gardens in London, which I can never visit again owing to the communists who run England. See, they let a mass murderer's daughter in to lecture the youngsters on the beauty of killing people. That's Che Guevara's daughter, is allowed to visit England. She's the daughter of one of the most bloodthirsty bastards of this last century, Che Guevara, who your child probably has a poster of. Read what he actually did, that son of a... It's on my website. A man, a Cuban, wrote it. What Che Guevara, the vermin, really did. How he enjoyed looking down as people were being executed. That'll give you some idea of what these Marxist-Leninists are really like. Where was I when I got so directly on? Who'll be on it? Oh, he'll be on in the next hour. Umberto Fontoiva. Doesn't he live in Miami, Beowulf? Okay, I'm gonna set up a meeting. I want finally to be taken to a decent Cuban restaurant. I go to one in a shopping center, you know, it's not Cuban food, it's like a luncheonette. But they play 60s music, 60s Cuban music, which I love. Hasta la reina Isabel para danzón. Orquestas. I know all of the Cuban, they're going out of my, I'm forgetting them now. I'm getting I'm getting nuts now. I'm losing it. I'm not forgetting. No, I'm joking right now. I'm not. I could sing some Cuban tunes if you'd like because I'm tired of the healthcare thing. Would you? How about some Irish songs? Would you like some Italian songs right now? How about some Dean Martin? And you know I'm out of business. The minute I play Mantovani music or Dean Martin, it's already time to hang it up and start the shooting squirrels somewhere in North Carolina with a slingshot, because I'm never going to do that.
When the moon come on. Like a big pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore.
All right, so my good friend PC, can I mention your name, Peter? I don't want to do it unless... Just sent me the answer. The guy's like a great guy. This guy has written health articles all his life. He's a great man. He just sent me the answer. The tanning tax, according to the Joint Committee on Taxation, would bring in $2.7 billion over 10 years. What? Industry groups representing the tanning salon say the number is way off. International Smart Tan Network, a Jackson, Mississippi-based independent statement, that the proposal overestimates tanning revenues by 40-50%. But let's say it's half of that, $1.4 billion over 10 years. That's $140 million a year, right? Isn't that right? $140 million a year over 10, So that means... Okay, so you're saying it's an industry of $1.4 billion a year for tanning? Do you know anybody who gets a tan anymore in this day and age? I'm tan-averse. I'm tanning-averse. To me, like, I'm a white guy, right? I like lily-white skin as an indication of health to me. Anyone with a tan is like a lunatic. I mean, if you're born with tan skin, fine. Whatever your skin color is, brown or tan, fine. That's nature. Well, who sits in the sun? A lizard even runs out of the sun. A cold-blooded creature tries to slither out of the sun. This guy goes into a tanning booth and lays there like in a sarcophagus. I look good. Then he goes to the restaurant at night. He sits outdoors in the Italian restaurant in the South Beach, smokes a cigar, leans back, got the wine ready. He's Don Perignon there because he's got a tan. Get back to me when he's 50, 60 years old, limping with the oxygen tank, and the skin is falling off. And the pectoral muscles are collapsing when the steroids wind down. You ever see Johnny Weissmuller in the later years? Oh, my God. He once played Tarzan in the early days, Johnny Weissmuller, remember? You don't know this, but there was a guy. You know Tarzan, okay? So it was a whole series of actors. Lex Barker. My age, Lex Barker. And now there's no one. I think the guy playing Tarzan today would be like something totally different. They turn him into some freakazoid altogether. But it was an early guy, Johnny Weissmuller. So he was good-looking, naturally, perfectly built. They had a movie set. He jumped in the pool. They made it look like it was in Africa. He got the blonde. The cheetah and swinging a fake rope that Max Blumenthal brought in from the hardware store. Like all the Indians were Jewish guys from Brooklyn that they gave like bonnets to. Remember when those movies, those bad movies? So Johnny Weissmuller was the Indian. I mean, he was Tarzan, pardon me. But I knew years later, a guy was a little older than me. He worked at the hotel up in the Catskill Mountains at the Concord. And in those days, Johnny Weissmuller was there. And he was like living in the rooms. They would bring him out on stage every once in a while, you know, in his later years. Now he's no longer Tarzan. I don't mean to insult, but I heard this secondhand. And the busboy said to me every morning, to be like, he would like regurgitate. They find regurgitation in his tray. It's like a stoned alcoholic with bottles underneath the bed. That's what happens to a lot of guys later on in life. So the whole thing is crazy. I mean, what do you think? You're going to live forever? Who's going to actually get this Obamacare when you think about it? There's a restaurant in I'm going to not say where. It's somewhere in Florida. It's an Italian chain restaurant. It's actually quite good if you know what to order. It's funny how you can pick, like, all the pastas on the menu. One is homemade in the basement. Leave it to me to find out which one I order that one. The meatballs are incredible. You know, I heard my meatball story, right? Well, I'll tell you the meatball story in a minute. Every night you go past this restaurant, you see people coming out with oxygen tanks and wheelchairs, and like walkers, like walking out. They look like bugs sprayed with Raid. They look like they were sprayed with veal parmesan juice. I never saw anything like this. How did they not stop eating this? Their hearts gave out. Their lungs gave out. Their livers gave out. Their kidneys gave out. Every night, veal parmesan with a dessert and ice cream that no one ever ate in old Italy. You know, oh, I want real Italian food. It's not real Italian food. It was called holiday Italian food in the 19th century. They ate it twice a year. Now these guys eat it every night. Every night. And they come out with the walker and the oxygen tank. And there's the son-in-law with the Buick Riviera from 1972 pulling up. I'll be right back, Dad. And there he's the lockout with the tardive dyskinesia-like walk from the medication they're on, from depression, from the son-in-law having married the daughter that they hated. They thought she would do better, marry a dentist. Instead, she married a kind of side salesman. The Buick Riviera that they gave him, by the way, in 1977, he pulls up with the smogmobile. And they're all stumbling around with the oxygen tank. And why? Because they know Obamacare is coming. Why do they have to stop eating the veal parmesan? There's no incentive to go onto a healthy diet. It's too late anyway. I know doctors have told me they had people dying with weeks to live in hospital wards from emphysema. They would light up cigarettes in the hallway when they could smoke. Why? No one knows. No one knows. The human being is almost impossible to change their behavior. I don't care what your proclivity is. And I'm not going to go into it. It's not my business. It's yours. I don't want the government in my bedroom, and I don't want them in my pocketbook. Let me tell you that. In fact, I want them out of my pocketbook and in your pocketbook. But unfortunately, the government's going to be in my pocketbook and in your bedroom eventually, whether you know it or not. That's how this is going to work. Anyway, the point of the story is about the meatballs. See, I told you, I don't lose track. This is amazing how I come back. The main thing about a story when you're doing it is you start all these things, you put the balls in there, you come back, or else the audience says, well, what about that track you're on? So here we go back to the meatball. Did I ever tell you my meatball story? Here's the meatball story. When America was great in the 1950s, meatballs were large and fluffy and tasty. But as America has become increasingly socialistic, the meatball itself has become small and mean and tasteless. They become like Swedish meatballs. I'm Michael Savage. I'll be right back.
What do you think your dad and your mom would have said about this moment?
Well, my brother called me. He was just so thrilled about what Mommy and Daddy would think about this. Of course, I believe that they do know.
Did your dad have a phrase, a sentence that meant the most to you when he'd say it to you?
Well, the only thing that comes to my mind right now is, make sure you have the votes.
That is arguably the most hated woman in America, Nancy Pelosi, on ABC World News, allegedly not with Tom Sawyer's illegitimate granddaughter. Not with. I said allegedly not with. It's unbelievable to me. Play clip 29. See, this is, she's making mistakes now.
Good evening. I know you're there. I can hear the...
Okay. That laugh, that I don't like. Wait, you know that laugh? Yeah, I know that laugh. There's a mayor in San Francisco, a former mayor does that. That's a certain Larry King has it. And it's a, how can I put it without getting in more trouble than I'm already in and deeper the day I go? Play it again and listen to the laugh. I'll explain it to you.
Good evening. I know you're there. I can hear the...
Good morning.
Is it morning? Not yet. Almost. Not in California.
All right, let's stop right there. Possibly one of the phoniest laughs in the human history. It's like a forced laugh that a lot of people, not her now, not her, but it's like from the drug world. When I say that, I mean like the pothead days, a lot of people with like pot laugh, like that's like a marijuana laugh, like from the 70s. I don't know how it gets up so high up the food chain, but like it, everyone thinks they're cool when they have that fake laugh. It's like the musician, that's it. It's like Mick Jagger probably laughed like that once by accident because he had a chicken bone stuck in his throat when he was dating a Jewish girl in London. And he went and he had a knedlach and there was a bone in it. And they thought that that was like a cool laugh for a musician. The next thing you know, 50 years later, the Speaker of the House of Representatives has the same laugh as Mick Jagger with a chicken bone in his throat. Go figure how that worked. I don't like it, and she's too arrogant. I think what's going to happen as a result is they're going to move her aside. They know that she's hated, the most hated. Remember I asked you what's like the biggest winner, the biggest loser? She's the most hated woman now in America. Never mind what Tom Sawyer's illegitimate granddaughter not thinks that she's most powerful. That's true in some way, but on the other hand, most hated because of the way she behaved during this process. Everyone saw the naked ugliness of Nancy the Hammer, and they don't like it. It was not even hidden because she's not even smart enough to do this quietly. Every time she'd beat someone up, she'd come out and say, I just beat someone up. Look, his blood is on my hands. You know, I used the hammer morning, noon, and night. What? No, I used the whip. Remember the whip thing? She had the nerve to say, my whole life is whipping, huh? I whip morning, noon, and evening. There's no end to my whipping. I can't believe this. Like a nasty, evil mother that everyone ran away from and moved to San Francisco to get away from a mother like that. Now she's like the mother of America that everyone wants to ditch. So don't think that these guys would just push the biggest bill in human history because everyone's going to make so much money. They need a fall guy. It's her. Just as I predicted before everybody that Obama's ratings will go up, which they did, while everyone else said they'd go down, it went up, actually, going to Rasmussen in one day because everyone likes a winner. I'm going to predict that Nancy Pelosi, although she is the putative winner here, she's too much of a liability for the Ram machine. And I believe that they're going to try to move her aside and bring in a new player. They're not going to do it overtly. It's going to be like retired to spend more time with the grandchildren on Air Force One, Air Force Three, or one of the Air Force planes that should be bombing Afghanistan. Is it we used to ferry her back and forth to Mulberry Street. Well, I don't know what she likes to eat, wherever, Chicago, whatever. With the 767 for everyone in the family, and in case they need a soda, they bring an Air Force general to serve them. Hey, schmuck. Get me a diet soda. What are you doing in the military with a uniform? They treat them like they're ushers in the Lois Valencia. The guy's an Air Force general. He used to be in charge of the SAC command, but under Obama, he got the SAC, and he's now serving diet sodas for Rosa DeLauro. Can you imagine this? I heard that they're going to serve ravioli puttanesca to Rosa DeLauro the next time she comes to the Republican National Committee for breakfast. But since they know what that is, it's probably not going to happen. They'll reserve that only for the Israeli diplomats.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Now, today on The Savage Nation, we've asked some very important questions. I'm going to ask them again. How do you feel about what Obama and Pelosi have done to America? What's your reaction to Obama's self-congratulatory signing speech this morning? It's kind of unheard of, isn't it, for a president to be that insecure? What do you fear will happen to your health care under Obama's plan? I mean, really. How do you feel about Obama now that the bill has been signed into law against the will of the people? What is your reaction to the Republicans' weak-kneed response? Do you actually believe Obamacare will be stopped in the courts? Why or why not? What worries you most about the way in which Obamacare was enacted? Who is the most hated political figure to have arisen out of this process? Or who is the most dangerous political figure to have arisen out of this process? I think we should talk about Obama's victory lapdogs instead of his victory laps. Obama has broken the will of America. America said to Obama with one voice, in every poll, liberal or conservative, we do not want socialized medicine, leave it alone. But Obama ignored that voice and shackled America with government health care. The passage of the health care bill is a triumph of the will of Obama, not of the American people. And ever since the triumph of his will, Obama has been taking a victory lap. He spoke after the passage of the bill about how this was another stone laid firmly in the ground of the American dream. He spoke at the signing ceremony about how he set in motion reforms generations have longed for. And later this week, he'll speak about the wonders of Obamacare in Iowa. Like the baby dictator he is, he can't stop patting himself on the back for his socialist work. But he's not alone. The compliant fifth column media is praising him as well. Leslie Stahl of 60 Minutes even compared him to an Olympic athlete. And his own cronies are even worse. Nancy Pelosi said this millstone around the neck of America passed because of the leadership of Obama as a visionary, a strategist, and a persuader. Of course, the worst of all was Joe Biden. He was Biden this time, and he was once considered to be a pragmatic, independent Democrat. Now Biden has proven himself to be nothing more than a lapdog for the baby dictator. You see, at the signing of Obamacare today, he said Obama had made history. That history is made when a leader steps up and charts a fundamentally different course for the nation. Then he said, Mr. President, you are that leader. Well, I can't think of a recent fawning speech that matches this one. Would you imagine what would have happened if Bush had had that done when he had passed the bill? What people would have said? So as Obama takes his victory lap, his victory lap dogs are out in force. But America itself has a different reaction. America rejects Obamacare by overwhelming majorities in every poll. America's outraged that it'll pay more taxes, get worse coverage, and live under the shadow of Obama's socialist heel. That's why I say this victory may be short won. At least we hope so. Well, Obama was continuing to run around and take his victory lap on socialized medicine today.
Today, after almost a century of trying, today, after over a year of debate, today, after all the votes have been tallied, health insurance reform becomes law in the United States of America.
I wouldn't speak too soon, Mr. President. It still has to go through the nasty old courts.
It is fitting that Congress passed this historic legislation this week. For as we mark the turning of spring, we also mark a new season in America. In a few moments, when I sign this bill, all of the overheated rhetoric over reform will finally confront the reality of reform.
It's not overheated rhetoric. It's genuine, passionate opposition. We live in a democracy.
The bill I'm signing will set in motion reforms that generations of Americans have fought for and marched for and hungered to see. It'll take 4 years to implement fully many of these reforms because we need to implement them responsibly. We need to get this right. But a host of desperately needed reforms will take effect right away. This year, we'll start offering tax credits to about 4 million small businessmen and women to help them cover the cost of insurance for their employees. That happens this year.
And illegals. Don't forget illegal aliens, but I'm sure you'd rather not talk about that. even worse than Joe Biden, who fawned over Obama in a way that was quite nauseating.
Ladies and gentlemen, to state the obvious, this is a historic day. You use that phrase a lot, but I can't think of a day in the 37 years that I've been a United States senator in the short time I've been vice president that it is more appropriately stated. This is a historic day. And history is not merely what is printed in textbooks. It doesn't begin or end with the stroke of a pen. History is made. History is made when men and women decide that there is a greater risk in accepting a situation that we cannot bear than in stealing our spine and embracing the promise of change. That's when history is made.
Can you believe this?
Your fierce advocacy, the clarity of purpose that you showed, your perseverance, these are, in fact, it is not hyperbole to say, these are the reasons why we're assembled in this room together today. But for those attributes, we would not be here. Many, many men and women are going to feel the pride that I feel in watching you shortly, watching you sign this bill, knowing that their work has helped make this day possible. But, Mr. President, you're the guy
that made it happen. It's really sickening. Turn Joe off, would you please? Savage beagles terrorized East End. I didn't do it because of the name Savage. It was about dogs. Now, you look at a beagle, you figure a dog is a friendly dog, a beagle, right? It says, Charlie Brown, watch your back. A plague of vicious wild beagles has struck Long Island. And there's a picture of what looks like an ordinary house pet, a beagle. But these are different beagles. These floppy-eared terrors are no lovable Snoopies. They are abandoned hunting dogs that live in packs and have gone from humble pets to hounds from hell. Matic resident Dot Whatever came face-to-face with the canine menace 2 weeks ago when she was set upon by a group of crazed, hungry beagles as she walked her pet dogs near her parents' Orient Point home. She said it was like a scene from a werewolf movie. They were barking so ferociously that I thought they were going to attack my dogs. Our dogs, who were much bigger than the beagles, were too scared to even bark back. Liberal dogs. She said, I grabbed my two dogs and ran inside. I just closed the door when they jumped at the door and they broke that aluminum portion underneath. The attack happened in a flash. It was only when the 61-year-old dog lover was safely inside that she made the shocking realization that her howling attackers weren't coyotes or Rottweilers, but were three frothing, short-legged, brown and white beagles. Well, the answer is the angry beagles that attacked her are part of a huge community of feral beagles that roams the woods and fields of eastern Long Island after having been abandoned by hunters who use them to track down rabbits. According to local activists, some hunters act like small-time Donald Trumps, firing the dogs that don't do well during the November to February hunting season. One told a shelter worker, if you don't take the dog, I'll shoot it in the head. If the dogs don't perform, they don't have a use for them, said Pam Greener, runs Kent Animal Shelter in Calverton. Despite the beagle's small size and normally playful dispositions, they normally group up in vicious packs to hunt for food once they're on their own. Well, anyway, you get the picture. I've been meaning to get up to the snow. I haven't been up there in years. I don't know what happened. I used to love the snow. I used to go every year to like I liked North Lake Tahoe on the Nevada side. I even owned a house up there once for a year. I couldn't take this chimney smoke. This is the problem. Man ruins everything. Wherever you go, man ruins it. You go to the most pristine places on earth, there's a schmuck burning a wood fire. You can choke to death. It's like industrial England. The pollution is the equivalent of industrial England. I have a house in a neighborhood in Marin County. All of them with the peace signs on the sidewalk and the two fingers and the Obama signs, they make the most pollution of all. They're all into global warming and the environment and CO2. You can't go near the house. It looks like a smelter in London in 1597. You know, at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution in the 1600s. Go tell a liberal what a hypocrite he is. Why is it I'm a conservative? I don't burn firewood. I want fire. I like if I have a gas fireplace. It works. Why doesn't the Bay Area ban wood fires? Why? What's wrong with these people? While you're at it, you can ban the barbecue, too, at the same time. I know I'm not going to engender a lot of love amongst conservatives. They'll say, who are you to legislate? We have a right to make fires and barbecue whatever we want. Well, you have the right to dump mercury into the bay, too, if you want, right? Then throw old batteries into the bay and kill everything. No, you don't have the right to poison the air. We all share it. How's that? All right. I'll be right back. Savage. Now that Obama's socialized medicine may become a reality, there are examples of government-controlled care that gives us dire warnings of things to come to you. Joining us now is Dr. Grace Vuoto, whose recent article in Reflections magazine brings up an important and disturbing look at a problem in the VA. Grace Vuoto, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, what do you think is going on there that will affect Obamacare?
Well, this actually is very important to the whole healthcare debate because it's a case study in what happens when the government takes over healthcare. This is really a blockbuster story. I think it's something that if the individual that I interviewed becomes triumphant, ultimately it'd probably be a movie made on this. Basically, this is a story about a neurologist by the name of Dr. Robert Van Boven. And he discovered major fraud and abuse of power and mismanagement at the Veterans Administration. He was hired to oversee a program that would do research into traumatic brain injury. Michael, as your listeners know, traumatic brain injury occurs. Many veterans suffer from this if they were close to a blast in either Iraq or Afghanistan. When they come home, they suffer from severe, severe head pain, leading to great, great consequences in their personal lives, even to the point that some cannot bear the pain and commit suicide. Right now, the Army is dealing with record high suicide rates. So this doctor, he was going to oversee a program that would do research to help our veterans who are in such pain. And the government had allocated $6 million for this research. He was thrilled that he was going to oversee the program, but no sooner did he begin than he recognized that a vast portion of that money had been completely squandered, mismanaged, wasted. He was horrified at what he discovered. And he began to sound the alarm bells. He went up the chain of command, talking to one person after the other, telling them there is some serious fraud going on here. And he was even more horrified when he discovered that his superiors were involved in a cover-up. They were all involved in covering up this huge mismanagement of public funds that were supposed to go to helping veterans.
Well, what happened when he sounded the alarm?
Once he started sounding it, essentially he realized that he was going up against an old boys club. There were a group of his superiors that were all in collusion, and what they did was they organized an investigation to try to trump up reasons for dismissing him. So that's a typical way that whistleblowers are handled. He was eventually dismissed, and he has suffered severe, severe professional consequences. He is now, however, launching a major campaign to rehabilitate his own name. He has been, unjustly treated. And we have even the Government Accountability Project, which has taken up his case. This is a nonprofit organization which seeks redress for whistleblowers within the federal bureaucracy. If you have a whistleblower now within the federal bureaucracy, and he is unjustly treated, the Government Accountability Project tries to get redress for that.
What happens next?
Well, what happens now is that, first of all, I want to underscore to your listeners how important this case is as a case study for a government takeover of healthcare. You have two things that basically happen. Number one is you have these huge bureaucracies that have a vested interest in protecting their own. And you see that over and over again in states that have government-run healthcare. This is a small snippet of it. And secondly, you have individuals, even the very well-meaning ones, like Dr. Van Boven, who simply cannot perform their duties because of the huge mismanagement. And then they're persecuted when they try to tell the truth about the situation. So this is a warning cry to Americans. Take heed of this. This is what happens when the government has so much money to spend at its discretion. Usually, it's bureaucrats who become richer and richer and who then begin to abuse their power, and they silence those who seek to do some real good for the American people. In this case, what we see is that the government cannot get it straight when it comes to taking care of the health of our veterans, our very own veterans. And if we can't do it right for our veterans, do you think we're going to be able to do it right for everyone else in the country? I'm very skeptical.
Any signs that this is going to get any better?
Well, there is a bill now in Congress to try to give whistleblowers much more protection. So this is something that your listeners can try to support. They can go to the Government Accountability Project website to learn more about that. So if we can give those within the federal bureaucracy the power to bring wrongdoers to account and not be the ones that are persecuted themselves, this can be extremely helpful. But more than that, I think the larger issue at hand here is that we must demand that Obamacare be repealed, because what we see here with this $6 million being squandered, it's going to be replicated in larger and larger numbers when the government is going to be a bigger player in the whole health care management.
Where can we read more?
Your listeners can go to Reflections Magazine, which is a publication of the Edmund Burke Institute for American Renewal. That's at edmundburkeinstitute.org, and they can click on to our cover story called Veterans Betrayed, written by yours truly.
Grace Vuoto, thanks again for being on the Savage Nation.
Thank you very much, Michael.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
You know, it's been almost a year since we first found out about Michael Savage being banned from Britain, and to this day, the media has been reluctant to talk about it. While I happen to be banned from visiting the shores of England because of so-called speech they don't approve of, they permit and even invite those who are guilty of much, much worse than speech. Joining us now is Umberto Fontova, who brought this up in a recent article he wrote. Umberto, thank you, and welcome back to the Savage Nation. Well, what are they doing here? Why would they permit a mass murderer's daughter to go there and ban Michael Savage?
No, the thing that amazed me is that right around the time that you were banned in Britain, right around just a couple of weeks in advance of that, or following that ban, Aleida Guevara, Che Guevara's daughter, was being welcomed with a red carpet treatment into the very nation that was banning Michael Savage for his hate speech. Now, some people might say, well, good grief, Umberto. It's the guy's daughter. The guy's been dead 40 years. This is the guy's daughter. How can you possibly... Well, but Aleida Guevara was going there by her own admission, to propagate her father's ideals.
No.
That's the amazing part. Britain, London, the very place that was banning Michael Savage for her so-called hate speech, was throwing a gigantic celebration, celebrating, with a gigantic fiesta, the 50th anniversary of Castro and Che Guevara's Stalinist regime. Folks, we're talking about a regime that jailed political prisoners at a higher rate than Stalin's own, that murdered, I almost said execute, but execution implies some form of judicial process, whereas we have it from Aleida's own father, how his executions took place. He said, judicial evidence is an archaic bourgeois detail. We execute by revolutionary or from revolutionary conviction. So in other words, this regime murdered more men and boys, and some women. By the way, they were way ahead of the Taliban in certain respects. Cuban Archives Project, and I have this fully documented in my books, to document like about a dozen women, one of them pregnant, executed by firing squad in Cuba in the early 60s. But in other words, this regime, capable of all of these things that I'm telling you, was being welcomed with open arms representatives of this regime in London by the same people who were banning so-called hate speech.
Unbelievable.
The amazing thing is that hate speech nowadays, you know, has an extremely elastic definition, but it's primarily used when somebody says something that might even imply, you know, a negative attitude towards a racial minority or a racial group or a certain sexual orientation and so forth. Well, here's what the regime that Britain threw out the red carpet for did in the mid-60s. Here is what Aleida's father did in the mid-60s. They rounded up in Cuba gays and what they called rockeros, rockers, long hairs.
Why?
Because in the mid to early 60s, it was a crime to try to listen to rock and roll music in Cuba. It was a... Even though a lot of what people were trying to listen to were, in fact, British bands, the Stones, the Kinks, the Beatles, and so forth, it was all considered by the regime as Yankee imperialist music. And so what would happen is that the regime rounded up tens of thousands of Cuban youths, long hairs, and anyone who had effeminate characteristics or mannerisms were rounded up en masse and thrown into forced labor camps that were called UMAP. The initials were UMAP, U-M-A-P. Not exactly the initials for gulag, but the conditions in them were practically identical. You know, many dozens of men and boys, youths primarily, died, were beaten to death, and so forth. And like I say, they concentrated on youths, all cities and so forth have areas where gay people are known to congregate. Well, the Castro regime would surround these areas with military trucks. Soldiers would go out with machine guns and so forth and herd everyone in these areas into trucks and dump them in forced labor camps. You know, and by the way, the camps had at the gate when they walk in, had a big sign that said, I interviewed a lot of the former inmates of these places who are now living in freedom in the United States and not afraid to tell the truth, not afraid of Castro's torture chambers anymore. And the sign in the front of these camps as you walked in, it said, work will make men out of you. Which is interesting because Auschwitz had a big sign in front that said, work will set you free.
Oh, my God.
And I also interviewed people who went to high school. And to, as a matter of fact, my father went to University of Havana at the same time as Fidel Castro, the same age. But my dad's in much better health. And Castro was always a keen student of a fascist and Nazi paraphernalia. Mussolini, primarily, because of his, I guess, his Latin heritage. But it's no coincidence among those of us who know Cuban history that Castro's most famous speech is titled, History Will Absolve Me. He gave this speech and he wrote a book with that title back in 1953 when he was first arrested. Well, that also happens to be the most famous quote by Adolf Hitler after the beer hall putsch. It's the same thing. So again, I repeat, this is the regime that was being celebrated in Britain at the same time that they were banning Mr. Michael Savage for so-called hate speech. You know, hate speech is one thing to insinuate something, but what about when it takes the literal form, not of speech, but hate actions, as in herding gays into forced labor camps, beating some of them to death, starving others to death, and here's a woman coming to Britain to celebrate these things. In her own words, she was going there to celebrate her father's ideals. Well, those were her father's ideals. They were fully documented.
That's crazy. Sorry, crazy.
You know, you reach a point where you almost have to develop a sense of humor about the hypocrisy. You know, you want to think that ignorance accounts for a lot to it, but no, it's been 50 years. People have been saying and writing about these atrocities for 50 years. But what happened is that the left, the liberals, had a monopoly on the mainstream media, so it was difficult for these items to penetrate the mainstream media filter because we were bad-mouthing the left's premier poster boys, Fidel Castro and Che Guevara.
But the media darlings didn't go out of the way that Hollywood portrayed, though, did they?
Oh, no. As a matter of fact, the amazing thing about these last two movies, because it's really one movie, but it's separated into two because of the length, the four-hour movie by Steven Soderbergh and by Benicio del Toro, Che Guevara. In fact, you can pretty much say that the primary mentor screenwriter for that movie was none other than Fidel Castro, because it is based on Che Guevara's diaries. This is according to Steven Soderbergh himself, the director. Hey, this base, we wanted to be sure that the movie was historically accurate, so they base it on Che's diaries, which were in fact edited by Castro's propaganda ministry, and in fact, the very foreword to these diaries were written by Fidel Castro himself. And Benicio del Toro and Steven Soderbergh visited Havana often, and in fact, thanked the you say these things, you can't believe, and they sat there, and this is on record. They thanked Castro and his propaganda ministry. They didn't call it the propaganda, but that's what it was, for helping them so much with the movie. You know, I have to remind myself, you know, how old I am, and I have to remind myself that the Soviet Union, or that the East Bloc, the Iron Curtain fell 20 years ago, over 20 years ago, because there's no way that while I was growing up, people would take seriously something that was produced in conjunction with the propaganda ministry of a Soviet-aligned nation. You know, no one would have believed this, but now apparently a lot of people are. The movie has not done well, but not because of its historical inaccuracy, although it's a historical joke, because of its dramatic qualities, which I guess is saying something.
Humberto Fontova, thanks really much for being on The Savage Nation.
It's always great to have the Michael Savage Show to try to get the truth out about what's going on in a Stalinist regime and what went on by these Stalinists just 90 miles from U.S. shores. Thanks again, buddy.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
Now on the Savage Nation, I have to read something very important to you that has nothing to do with health care. As you well know, I've been trying to awaken you, the listener, to a misjustice that is being done to a heroic soldier. Lieutenant Behenna was sent to 15 years in Fort Leavenworth. I don't think you know much about what's going on. Wait, don't turn this off. You're not going to believe this. You will not believe this. I just learned from his girlfriend in a letter, for Shannon Wall, that in prison, Michael Behenna has no access to the internet or email and is not allowed to have any phone calls or visits from anyone he didn't already know before he went to prison. Now, let me stop right there. Do you know that the terrorists, the 9/11 terrorists, were given laptops by the Defense Department? Do you know that they're allowed visits and phone calls from anyone they wish related to law firms or social activist groups? And yet here's a hero, Lieutenant Behenna, who has been railroaded, in my opinion, by the U.S. Army. Somebody is out to get him. Did you know that any contact with the media could potentially get Behenna moved to maximum security? Did you know any of this? His girlfriend, Shannon Wall, wrote us and said, "My name is Shannon Wall, and I'm the girlfriend of First Lieutenant Michael Behenna. Purpose of my letter is to thank you for everything you have done for Michael. Your support financially and in your comments on the radio has brightened our spirits in ways we could not have imagined. I'm sorry to tell you that Michael has no access to the internet. He's not allowed to have any phone calls or visits for anyone he didn't already know before he went to prison. Contact with the media could potentially get him moved to maximum security. Where the hell is the ACLU? That's my addition. But Michael Savage, recently your words penetrated the walls of the prison when he heard you talking about his case on your radio program. That, Dr. Savage, was a very good day in the life of Michael Behena. In my most recent visit to Fort Leavenworth, Michael Behena wanted me to express to you his heartfelt gratitude and appreciation for all the support you have given him and his family, and he hopes one day to soon to be able to thank you in person. I have to read more of this, folks. You'll have to indulge me, because an innocent man is rotting behind bars, but he's not an ordinary innocent man. He's an American hero. While the phonies with the scrambled eggs on their hats are lining up their next contract with contractors when they leave the military, in my opinion. She writes, "The next week it will be 1 year since Michael Behena's freedom was taken from him. On March 20, 09, Judge Dixon denied Michael's motion for a mistrial, and we were given 30 minutes to say our goodbyes. That is a trauma I will live for with a very long time. It is the nightmare that just won't go away. Listen to this, people. A few days later, Michael was paraded in handcuffs through the Nashville airport, the Milwaukee airport, and finally the Kansas City airport, en route to Fort Leavenworth, in shackles and handcuffs. Now remember, this is a hero from Iraq. This is an Army Ranger. She says, it makes me cry just thinking about our country treating my Michael so shamefully. I am now fighting every day along with his family to bring justice to this American hero who is willing to give up his life for our freedom. But with you, Savage, in our corner, the mountain doesn't seem quite as high as it did before. Thank you, sir, for giving Michael a voice for justice. With my deepest respect, Shannon Wall." Ladies and gentlemen of the Savage Nation, I beg you to keep sending money to the Savage Legal Fund. And most importantly, please pressure your congresspeople and to investigate this case. Something doesn't add up. Here's a sad story. Dateline, Montesano, Washington. I don't know where that is. Wash man electrocuted by urinating on power line. Authorities believe a Washington man was killed by accidentally urinating on a downed power line after car crash. Grays Harbor County Sheriff's Deputy Dave Pimentel. See, then they have to phoneticize now everything because we have so many illiterates in the country that AP now, makes you can, like, phonetically spell everything now, since most people don't speak English or read Associated Press. So they spell out names. Pim said Monday, 50-year-old Roy Messenger was not seriously hurt after he collided with a power pole Friday and called a relative to pull his car from a ditch. However, family members found Messenger electrocuted when they arrived. Pimentel says Messenger apparently urinated into a roadside ditch but didn't see the live wire. The urine stream likely served as a conductor, allowing the electricity to reach his body. Pimentel says there will be an autopsy, but burn marks indicated the way the electricity traveled through Messenger's body. Okay, our sympathies go out to the Messenger family. I sincerely mean that. That could happen to anybody after a car wreck. I mean, if you don't see a buried power line, you know, scared, you got to relieve yourself. That's it. That's the end of your life. Okay, rock and roll. I want some rock and roll, real rock and roll. Give me some real rock and roll right now on the Savage Nation. To a study that just came out on sleep. This is astounding. A group called the National Sleep Foundation, the NSF, probably a front for a mattress group for all I know, says that each ethnic group sleeps differently. Most African Americans like to pray just before they sleep it. White Americans like to do it with their pets, and Asians tend to do it best, meaning sleep. So whites sleep with dogs and cats. Asians sleep better than anybody else, according to these people. And it says African-Americans like to pray just before they go to sleep. The NSF surveyed 1,007 adults aged 25 to 60 for the annual poll. I never sleep well. I never have a good night's sleep, so where do I fit in? Who said sleep is important? See, you got to understand how much of this is fear. All your life you've been told, eat this and you'll die. Ingest that and you'll die. The water you drink is poisoned by bottled water. The air you breathe is poisonous to kill you and your children and ruin your gonads. Now they're telling you that if you don't sleep, you're going to drop dead. So again, what is it all telling you? Go to the either Big Daddy government. Obama's going to make your food cleaner, your air cleaner, your water cleaner, and you're going to sleep better if you vote for Obama. The man can even affect your sex life if you were to believe any of this. I actually believe I'm a contrarian when it comes to sleep. I mean, it's good if you can get it. But I've come to understand you don't really need sleep. Not much of it anyway. We need much less sleep than we think we need. Look at what men can do in combat when they have to. Look at what people have to do when they hold down three jobs when they really have to. Look what you did when you were into sex, drugs, and rock and roll, how little sleep you can get away with them compared to now. You really think you need 9 hours in a bed? What for? I mean, if I lay down and sleep, I know it's coming. It's either going to be me as an ancient Mayan with my face painted with various dyes, cutting someone's heart out and rolling them down a pyramid, usually my business enemies, or it's me at Heathrow Airport trapped and I can't get home. I don't know which is worse. Me as an ancient Mayan cutting out someone's heart. No, I'm joking. I never had that dream. Or the repetitive dream of me being trapped at Heathrow. I don't really understand that. 10 years now I've been dreaming I'm trapped at Heathrow. It's symbolic because I'm trapped at Heathrow in essence because I'm banned in Britain. Stay tuned on your local affiliate and, of course, with God's will and your listenership.
Savage.